Hello, my name is Jerry Jewett-Tennant, and I'm the Partners in Education Evaluation Research Program Coordinator at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm here today with one of our program's fellows, Allison Patrick of the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. I want to start by saying we're very excited and honored to be here on this panel with all these other institutions. And we realize we're standing on the shoulders of Tufts and by proxy Northwestern, who helped us a great deal with our program. And we don't have any relationships to disclose. Like all the panel here today, we're funded by the Clinical Translational Science Collaborative through our Community Engagement Corps. However, our community research program was actually run through the Prevention Research Center for Healthy Neighborhoods, which is who I work for. We're one of 37 national prevention research centers funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Two goals of our Community Engagement Corps are described here. And I won't read those to you because you can read. To achieve those goals, we were very fortunate to apply for and receive an administrative supplement grant from the CTSC to develop a research capacity building program and launch our first cohort. So we're at a very different stage in our program than all of these other groups are. We're at the very beginning, really. The proposed idea for a research training program developed out of a number of different conversations that we had with our community partners. We were hearing from three different groups, really. NOCA, which is our network of community advisors, they advised the PRC on our research agenda, and they were telling us that we really need some more information about research and the type of research you do so we can better inform you on that research agenda. So we also heard from community organization leaders who were telling us that we'd really like to know more about research because we need to find out more information about the programs we're conducting and how are these working or not working. And we also heard from CBPR faculty at Case Western who were telling us that although there are very few of them, they do work with some community agencies and they wanted to communicate in a better way about the methods of research and the language of research with these agencies. As part of the activities, or after writing and receiving our supplemental grant, we had the basic shell of our program. So one of the activities we needed to do was conduct a national search, and what we found was that there were several one-day seminars, and they could be aimed at various different groups. And we did find one five-month-long program, which was Tufts at Boston University and Harvard. And that seemed to suit us best. We came to Carolyn, and she showed us around and let us view her program like she did with NYU. And to make a long story short, we learned a lot about what they had done, and they shared their materials with us, and we are very grateful. And I have to apologize for that last program there, because obviously Northwestern's was 18 months long. We were getting a little full of ourselves there. So we are 18 months long, and we did have a community advisory board. After we had that shell of the program laid out, we had a group get together and advise us on what research meant to them. And that was really informative, because research was intimidating, even the word sometimes. They didn't want to say they conducted research, even though they were doing evaluations on their programs, and they were gathering data about their programs. So once we convened this advisory committee, they came up with our name, which is Partners in Education, Evaluation, and Research, and they had these four objectives for us as well. And we realized we may take several cohorts to get to the end of, to evaluate our objectives here, but we do have some measurements that we have implemented already. This is our program in a nutshell. We had five fellows this year. It's our pilot year, and they attended research seminars twice a month for 2 or 3 hours, depending on the topic. Other structural elements included a community organization mentor that came from their own organization and was usually one level above them in the organization to help them disseminate information back into their organization. And they also had a faculty partner who worked with them on a research project development. They basically had 12 months didactic learning and then 6 months project-focused learning. Our pilot cohort came to us in a variety of different ways. They all filled out applications, however, and we did institutional interviews with them. They all came from very different places, and they do very different work. which we hope is a learning experience for them and also will build relationships between those groups as well. Our demographics, we had 4 females and 1 male. They were mostly between 35 and 45 and were considered middle management. Only one was at their position more than 10 years, which it didn't seem to be an indicator of success in the program, how long or how few years you had been in your position. Even though our pilot cohort isn't quite done yet, we've been able to see some positive results. We were very excited that we had 100% retention of our faculty and our fellows, and all 5 faculty partners have said they would participate again if given the opportunity. Through some minor evaluation process that we've been doing, we do anticipate 5 research posters from all 5 fellows that will be presented at a seminar in November. At least 1 research paper should be in the works next year, and we anticipate continued relationships between these pilot faculty and their fellows. And actually, 1 fellow and faculty partner have already received a $10,000 grant to continue their program. So nothing's perfect, of course, so we did have some stumbling blocks along the way, and you can see we've reconvened an advisory committee to help us work through these problems that we got some feedback from our fellows about some of these things that the program did or did not do for them, and then we've, you know, come up with some action plans for maybe fixing those challenges in the next cohort. The main thing that we're fixing or changing is that we're going to a didactic applied alternating model. So 3 months didactic learning, 3 months applied for 12 months. We also had some lessons learned that we need to do with our organizations. We did not engage them as a cohort as much as we should have. We definitely focused on our faculty and fellow cohorts, and they were not as engaged as we would like them to be, especially because the entire program is based around organizational capacity. So we need to do a little bit more intensive work with our organizations for the next cohort. And we did have some lessons learned with our faculty as well. One of our main objectives with the faculty is that Case Western, like Northwestern, is not a traditionally CBBR kind of school. So we wanted to pique the interest of more faculty to do this kind of research and look at it as a valuable research path for their careers. We thought that might come about organically, which it did not. So we need to have a strategic plan in place to get that kind of interest going in various departments in our institution. Our future challenges, you know, we are continuing the peer program, and we'll have a second cohort in April 2014. And our main challenges are, who are we really training, organizations or individuals? And we really need to create a culture, because we've come to the conclusion that it is organizational capacity that we're trying to get to. So we really need to create a culture in this program that everyone understands that the organization is the bottom line. And getting that research in there is what we're all about. We also have some challenges in measuring this longitudinally. How do we determine that we've made an impact 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road in these organizations? We have some, you know, short-term evaluation plans, but you know that's a long haul. And also long-term sustainabilities within these organizations. I think we all had an idea that they would just charge off and do research once they were done with the program, and that we're realizing, you know, there's some more support needed there, and we should probably, you know, consider how long do we stay with the first cohort, and is it going to run simultaneously with the second cohort? Do we still offer that support to people, which I think we're obliged to? Those are just a few of the questions that keep me up at night. So thank you for letting me purge that. Hopefully we'll have some time at the end and you can give me your ideas about what we should do with that. And now one of our peer fellows, Allison Patrick, is here to give you her perspective on traveling the road to research that peer had led her on.
Well, thank you very much for allowing me to participate today. My name is Allison Patrick. I am the program manager for the Maternal Child Health Program at the Cuyahoga County Board of Health. Our agency is a large urban health department located in Northeast Ohio. We have a staff of 150 individuals that work in over 57 municipalities serving over 850,000 residents in our health jurisdiction. We are quite large and quite busy, but definitely needed to think about how we build our research capacity in our organization. So I'm here to take you down my 18-month journey in 5 minutes or less. So what did I know back in May of 2012 when I started? I guess I should go back. Before I even had the privilege of being a fellow, I had a privilege of actually being the community voice in the development of PEER. So, you know, some of the things that we learned are partly my fault because, you know, I was the voice and I was wrong. But what I thought back in May of 2012, IRBs are terrible. We should not work with them. They're very cumbersome. They take forever. They delay your process. You know, and we also have a community which we serve and which we work with who feel that they're very intrusive, and it is our duty as public health to not allow our residents to be treated like lab rats. So, you know, we deal with that on a daily basis. Elaine and I went back and forth during the development that research and evaluation are very different things. We do not do research as a public health agency. We are required to evaluate our programs, but we are not funded to do that. So we do a lot of pre-post survey work, and otherwise, you know, we collect lots and lots of data that we don't do anything with. A research project can really be whatever you want it to be, and as you'll see in a minute, the bigger the project, the bigger the impact you could show. So I'm a dietitian by training. When I started at the Board of Health, I actually did work in coordinated school health, so if any of you are familiar with that model, we went from uncoordinated school health, moving schools to coordinated school health. It was actually pretty adaptable to my project. I came up with the uncoordinated research project. So back in the beginning, I decided birth outcomes was what I was interested in looking at. I'm so glad that this animation is going to work. And glad that I can now, looking back, laugh at myself thinking how crazy this was. Birth outcomes, any and all of them. And when you think about what impacts birth outcomes, well, we have access to care. We have mental health. And then we have this thing called healthy eating, active living, which I was very familiar with dealing with. So nutrition and physical activity. And then because my faculty partner is actually the co-director of the Asthma Institute at the Cleveland Clinic, we thought, well, we should include in our project something of her interest, so let's just tack environmental pollutants on. And then let's really focus on food access, green space, parks and rec, tobacco, and that was my research project. Journal of Maternal Child Health, here I come. And my question really was, how does the geographic distribution of resources impact birth outcomes? And really where I was headed with that was social determinants of health approach in our area in maternal child health is very new. So if we could look at as many social determinants as possible, that would be a really good thing for our county. What I know now, PEER has straightened me out, IRBs served a distinct purpose. I actually used a secondary data set in my project, so I didn't have to go through an IRB, but in this process, I learned when I was trying to access my data set that the state health department actually has an IRB. So that was a learning tool there. And I kind of mocked up an application. So if I would have had to submit it, I kind of went through that process of, oh my God, why are they asking this? I learned that research and evaluation can actually be one and the same, and that projects that are narrow in scope can still show significant impact. So I now have a coordinated research project. I redefined my birth outcome to be preterm birth. I chose one area of social determinants, so I honed in on food access so that I could still bring my nutrition focus with me. And I honed in on what we had defined in another grant project as healthy food access in our county, which were supermarkets and grocery stores. And I then had a project that had a question of, does living in a food desert impact preterm birth outcomes in Cuyahoga County? And I am happy to say 18 months later that I do have a poster, complete, with statistically significant results. And then I looked at it and I said, well, what do we do about this? Because living in a food desert in our county does put you at higher risk for having preterm birth. And I've kind of decided that might be somebody else's problem in the health department to deal with. But nonetheless, it was quite exciting. And even this morning I was sharing that I sat in on a presentation on preterm birth, and when they slapped their results up, I went, I know what that means now. I knew what an odds ratio was, and I was able to interpret for myself. So that was kind of an exciting offshoot of all of this. So what was the usefulness of the program to me? Well, as part of it, I actually was able to complete GIS course. So a year later, I now have basic mapping skills. I learned how to write syntax code. The data cookbook for the Ohio birth file is 26 pages long. And through some painstaking processes, I was actually able to learn the syntax code to extract what I needed. This next one I laugh about too, conducting a thoughtful and organized lit review. So public health, our health department, we don't have access to online journals, and it really drives us crazy. So as part of this program, I was able to access CASE's online journal system and jumped the gun and started my lit review before the peer session on how to conduct a lit search. And my jump drive has 200 articles that I found and was fully prepared to read, which it was funny because one of the professors was sitting me in the library that day going, well, who's the lead researcher in your field? I don't know. What topics are you searching? I don't know. Food access, physical activity. And, you know, so it was just kind of my aha moment. And I can now conduct a more thoughtful review of what the literature says. Our health commissioner always tells us public health is the greatest story never told, and that's partly our fault because we don't know how to tell our story. And so this really, again, proved the importance of using data and evidence to prove that something that we're doing is successful, or there really is a need in our local community, and it's our obligation as public health to help solve that. And I was able to combine my old skill set, which was nutrition, with my new skill set, which is in the maternal child health field. The program's usefulness to our agency, we now have a renewed focus to merge program and evaluation as much as possible, even if it's funded or not. The project actually fostered new relationships within our agency. You know, we have a Department of Epidemiology, Surveillance, and Informatics, and I sit in the Department of Prevention and Wellness, and you would really think there would be a lot of different things that could be married between those two departments, and I can tell you we work in very separate silos. So this has helped us create and kind of merge some of the new relationships. As a public health department, we have tons of data. We use the maternal child health data set that we get every year in the same way. So this program actually allowed us to use that data set in a completely different way. And now we do have more staff that are interested in kind of building their skill set and conducting more thoughtful evaluation of programming. And how did we improve our research capacity? So my supervisor and I have a core staff of 7 individuals, and in our monthly staff meetings, we just started to infuse some of the basic concepts of PEER. What are the differences between research and evaluation? Why it's important to look to the evidence base when you're thinking about doing programming? How to conduct a lit review that doesn't waste your time? And how to go about forming a research question based on your programs. And so we walked 7 individuals through that. And it was funny because we actually just did their assignment last week, which was their final one, which is go to the literature, find 3 articles, would you change your research question or your problem statement based on what you would find? And every single one of them ended up doing that because they thought, wow, I was way too broad. I would never be able to do this. And we actually had 2 that were thinking about pursuing their questions further in some basic evaluation of new programming. So that was kind of exciting. And then our future plans, we have an agency workforce development team that we're going to be meeting with to try to do that same introductory kind of concepts of research and peer with our staff and model it after a current agency QI training that we have going on. So we're taking 20 to 30 staff every year and training them in basic principles of quality improvement and then allowing them to apply those skills to their individual programs or an agency project. And we're envisioning we could do something like that, infusing the peer topics. For my project specifically, we are considering writing it up sometime within the next year. And then an outcome of that is we had future research implications that we're considering actually pursuing in another project to try to get more specific data. But if you're interested, I have copies of my poster on the back table just to kind of see, you know, what really we were able to accomplish in 18 months. So thank you again for allowing us to be here. And I think we're ready for questions now.
So I'd like to invite the panelists to please come up here, and we'd like to open the floor up for questions or comments. No, it's okay, I'll stand up here. Yes, in the back. I'll let it slide.
I think the first part about a coordinated effort is certainly a challenge that we face too. We've done a lot to try to build, just in the same ways we try to build networks among our community organizations, to build networks among the faculty who do this work. But especially at a university like ours and maybe yours, they're inherently decentralized, and there's not a place where, you know, everybody has to go through something before they go out, and we could cut it off or say, hey, did you know this person is also working in your same community. We have been starting conversations with our institutional review board so that a question is added that lets us know if a project is being conducted in a community, and then we can contact them to not necessarily make them coordinate with others, but at least have a better understanding. I don't even think we have a census of what are all the community research partnerships going on. But I agree that's a challenge. And then the second part, which I had something to say about. The funding. That's another issue that we just talked about with our steering committee co-chairs on Friday. We've had a lot of issues, especially as communities have gotten more involved in our infrastructure, and they're more known and they are more acknowledged within the university in terms of, these are, not official, but these are partners that have strong relationships. And so many people are going to them, like you mentioned. And we've started we're starting a discussion in our steering committee about, are there some principles or policies that we could advocate for the university or the school or a department to adopt, so that would say, if an organization hosts a student, then they get this kind of compensation, or they get, even just things like some of the community's partners were saying, acknowledgement or invitation to the student's presentation, or so that there would be guidelines if they come to speak in a class, they should automatically be given X. And so folks know about things like this, but we feel like we need a more standardized way. Sometimes community partners are compensated fairly well or adequately, and sometimes that they're not, and they all have such great hearts, they just do it anyway. But we don't want people to be abused.
Does anyone else want to respond to that question? Anyone? This is not something we've tried yet. I'll just say quickly. I know one conversation we're having at Tufts, and this is something that was brought up from our community partners who are involved in CBPR projects, is, you know, where does that indirect money go? And I know that they want to start having conversations with our institution about having that, you know, some of that indirect, which is coming off of CBPR projects funded by the NIH, that some of that be used to support community partners.